just checking to see if the equipment is working properly. I'm in the home of Mr. L. M. Williams in Enfield, North Carolina. The date is January 21st, 1991. And Mr. Williams, I want you to say who you are and that you know that this interview is being recorded. Yeah, just go ahead and talk. It'll pick up and it sounds.
I am Ellen Williams, former high school elementary principal in the Halifax County School System, and now I have an interview
with Ms. Wells.
Ms. Wells.
And you know it's being recorded.
And I know it's being recorded.
All right. All right, Ms. Williams, I appreciate you answering my questionnaire and taking the time out today to interview with me. I want you to try to, if you can, go back in time and think about when you were principal back in 1964. I'm doing a study trying to compare the role perceptions of black high school principals. Back there in 64, there were over 200 black principals of high schools. And last year when I sent to the State Department and asked for the number of blacks, they sent me a list and they had 41 on the list. And some of them are not principals of traditional high schools. Some of them are alternative schools. So you see the number is very small. But what I want to do, I'm interviewing with these two sets of principals and see if I can make some comparisons. So I want you to tell me how you became a high school principal.
Initially, I was a former teacher, taught at Eastwood High School, and there was a vacancy at the Inborn Union School in Enfield, North Carolina, and during the middle of the year, I was appointed principal of this union school, and this union school contained approximately 1,500 pupils. It was in the year of 1959 that I became principal of this school. And this is basically how I became principal.
You had been an assistant principal?
Well, at that time, didn't have assistant principal.
Oh, I see.
I mean, the principal would appoint you to help him out, but one of the law that you had assistant principal, and
didn't get to pay for it.
I was a so-called assistant principal, mm-hmm. such a name, but mm-hmm. but as far as being legal, that kind of thing, there was no such thing as assistant principal. Mm-hmm. And also at that time, that wasn't any such thing as a principal of a secretary at that time.
Oh, really? The principal had to do his own secretary.
Yeah, or he'll get his business teacher in the high school. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I used the business education teacher mm-hmm. to help with bookkeeping and things of that type, you know. Mm-hmm. And she would train students she's training students anyway, and this was an opportunity for us to work out a system or some kind of program whereby these students were able to work in and out of the office, because this was actual experience, live experience for them. And we were real interested in that, because since it was a black school, and this was another way we could help our students. I mean, for as a live experience working in the office, handling books and handling records, this kind of thing.
So you used that as a learning experience for
right.
the students.
Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. the state wasn't paying, so we had to figure out some way, you know, years ago, and it's still doing that. Well, black always had to improvise some way of accomplishing what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. So you had to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So how long did you stay at Enborton?
I left in 69, left in 69.
Mm-hmm. So you stayed there. Good. All right, now I want you to tell me something.
Okay.
Go on, tell me something about Enborton High School. How many teachers you had there? How many students you had? And well, we know the racial composition, but just tell me something about that school.
Well, during that period from 59 through 69, of course, that was it. I was there after the Supreme Court decision,
mm-hmm.
As a principal to work both schools. And of course, at that time, union school is all you had, you know, all for black and white, you know. And I was principal of both schools, working at both schools. And the high school was relatively small. I think we probably had maybe about 10, probably about 10 teachers. And I guess about probably between 250 to 300 students at that time, because the high school had just started, I think it's 1954, yeah. Because they had no high school here for some time, but they started one around that time. And the school had been existing, the high school department had been existing for approximately 4 years, 4 or 5 years, because I went there in 59. So it's been in existence about 5 years. As I said, with 10 to 12 teachers, and they had a science department, homework department. We did not have an agriculture department at that time. And your courses were general high school nature. They were so small we could not offer. We had to alternate physics every year and chemistry because of the smallness and staff. And that's why we had to do that.
Did you teach any of the classes?
Oh, when I first started, the principal said to teach because I taught one class or two classes. It was sociology and what else? I don't remember the other one.
Mm-hmm. But you did had to teach.
Had to teach, and of course that was, I enjoyed the teaching for it, but coming into a school in the middle of the year, with the former principal leaving, with not being there, and I had never had the opportunity to be a principal and teach at the same time, so that presented quite a problem with me trying to do administrative work and instruction work and all that. And really, I just didn't do that much with the class, to be frank about it, because I just couldn't work out like that. But I still had this class assigned on paper. And of course, and we found out that many principals, whether white or black, you assign it on your schedule, and you find somewhere, but the state require you to teach.
So you always figure out a way to get them in somebody else's class or something. All right, I want you to tell me something about, I'm going to ask you about different areas at the school, and tell me all you can remember. How did you select your teachers, and then how did you supervise them?
Well, out of my own feeling after working as a teacher for about 10 years and observing the principal that I worked with select employed teachers. Of course, we had to remember at that time, the principal had the privilege of, you recommended teachers, but it was understood thing, you recommended them, you hired them in the superintendent's office. But the law said that you recommended the superintendent. At that time, since you were black, you had that privilege of hiring and firing. You just tell the superintendent you a pretty good reason why you didn't want this teacher or why you wanted another one, that wasn't. So I would interview him for the position. It was a signed position. What the position was, vacancy. I would find out where the teacher lived or whatever, go through that and call, have him come into the school. I would interview him in terms of the area and try to find out the certification, qualification, and based on the certification, qualifications, in my opinion, and that determined what I would employ that teacher or not.
So the superintendent didn't interfere that much with what you decided?
No.
All right, once you got them there, now, how'd you keep check on them and make sure they did a good job?
Well, I happened to be one of those walking principals, I think, because he used to say, sound like Teddy Roosevelt. What was that, walk lighter?
You carry a big stick.
Yeah, a big stick. They gave me that name, you know. Mm-hmm. And based on what I knew and having worked with a principal, which I thought was a real good principal, I was supervised based on some research and other material and opinions of other principals. And of course, having had a course in supervision, mm-hmm. And putting that together, and I really supervised the teachers in terms of what they was doing in the classroom and what they was doing otherwise, as best I knew at that time. Mm-hmm. And of course, I didn't stay in the office. I didn't let trivial things wear me in the office. I stayed out, mm-hmm. where everything was going on.
So you knew what was going on in your school?
Yeah, I knew what was going on in my school.
Suppose you had a bad teacher, you know, sometimes you run on those not doing the job. Did you have a way of...
Yeah, well, I had a way of working those with what I would do. When I interview a teacher for the job, well, then I let it be known that at least twice or three times a year, we're going to have a conference, we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. And then conference was scheduled throughout the year with all the teachers that we had at the time, and I would have these conferences, and that was generally understood. I mean, it got to be kind of a common thing that he's going to walk around and walk in your room and kind of monitor what's going on. And might not say anything today. And then when the conference come up, we're going to talk about what went on and what we saw and how did you react when I came in your room, what did you feel? What did your students feel and all that? And then if I was having a problem teaching, well, then after the conference, we would talk about that specific problem, mm-hmm. and talk about ways of improving this problem or eliminating the problem if possible, or how could we help, mm-hmm. to work this thing out. And sometimes we were successful, sometimes we were not, because of personality problems and attitude problems. Mm-hmm. You know.
Curriculum and instruction.
Well, I stayed on instruction in terms of what I knew and my experience with instruction. I thought that was one of the most important phases of being a principal, knowing about the instruction program and observing to see how the instruction would be presented and what was happening, what was being, if anything is being learned or not being learned, and how were the pupils and teachers interacting to each other so far as the learning process. And then if the teacher felt that she needed some extra material for to improve instruction, if I thought that she might, then if money was available and we could get it, we'd try to get it. If not, we'd try to find out a way we could improvise something to work with. And of course, at that time, we didn't have too many when I started, they had too many innovative ideas, I don't think, I would say, as far as that school was concerned. After I went there, I began to do a lot of research and go to a lot of meetings and look at and find out some of the innovative ideas about instruction programs going on. And if I could, those parts that I could put into my program, into our program, then we would try to get those parts into our program to help them improve and enhance instruction.
Mm-hmm. And did you try to expand the curriculum? I know you said you didn't have the vocational when you came. Did you?
Yeah, well, when I first went to the school, for the whole school, when I first went there, we initiated a self-study program. Mm-hmm. And that at our expense, as best we could do. And that,
so you just did it yourself?
Yeah. Because that helped me, and it helped the teachers, because I didn't know much about a self-study program. Mm-hmm. And so somebody was talking to me and said, one thing you can do differently since you're here is do a self-study. So I inquired around and found out where and when we could get going. And I think we finally ended up with this. What's that accredited?
Southern Association.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made some contact with them. They sent me this information. I think it was called the Evaluated Criteria. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. we got that, and then I got the teachers and parents involved in that kind of self-study. And the things that we could really do ourselves, we went on with them. Mm-hmm. And then that last, I don't know, it was a continuous thing, ongoing mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And that helped to improve the structure of the program, helped improve a whole lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
And then that made me stay on the ball to follow through to all these different kinds of committees. And the whole idea was to find out what a school was, what a school needed to do, and how a school needed to function. Mm-hmm. And I think we did a pretty good job with it. And later years, before I left, the state came in with some program to improve the schools, mm-hmm. a state study, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what had happened with my teachers had gone through this process, writing these goals and objectives mm-hmm. and philosophy and the history of the school. Well, that wasn't no big hang up for them.
Good, because they'd been through it already.
Yeah.
What about discipline?
Discipline, well, I would believe that is. But discipline should first start in a classroom with a teacher or with the teachers in there. If a teacher couldn't discipline, she couldn't really teach. So we had some programs to work with that, and some were working that out, but the point was, I had the teachers understand all these little trivial things, these are your problems, not mine. Because mm-hmm. I'm here to help you with your instruction, of course I'm here to help with this. But you don't be sending students to the office to me. If he slaps somebody, he spit on the floor, that's your job, because mm-hmm. you're in the zone. Mm-hmm. You have to contain and control your room. And with that, with an idea like that, we didn't have no major discipline problems.
Because not like today.
No. No major discipline problems at all. Mm-hmm. Now, one or two teachers would have it, whatever the teacher, creating mm-hmm. those problems, mm-hmm. students and teachers. But mm-hmm. as far as otherwise, there was no major discipline problem. Mm-hmm. But you had to have, be very sensitive to the discipline problem, you know, and just to work with the school and work with teachers to help prevent a lot of the things from happening, you know. Mm-hmm. A well-planned program from the top through the classroom will help solve a whole lot of discipline problems.
Sure will. What about transportation?
Well, we had school bus transportation. I think we had about 10 buses, but most of them, since we were here in town, most of the majority of the students would walk to school at that time. And we had about 10 or 15 mile radius. We would pick up high school and elementary pupils and bring them in.
But it was your responsibility to see about the bus routes and
yeah, I had to write all the bus routes mm-hmm. and assign drivers and mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. What about the utilization of funds?
Let me see if I understand what you
did. The funds that you received from your county government
We didn't get enough. We got some funds. There are certain funds allocated for that school or for all schools mm-hmm. in the county. It was based on, I think, the per pupil, capital per pupil, I think, or something like that, in which meant that you would get some money, but the poor county, so they gave the superintendent X number of dollars around their school, and then the superintendent would give each principal, we didn't have enough money ourselves. I said, I signed on mm-hmm. paper, mm-hmm. X number of dollars for this or for that. and then you would submit your requisition form. Certain things like for your instruction program, like paper, construction paper, and mammograph paper, and so on, and you know, maps and that kind of thing, you know. But it wasn't that much. When you used it up, that was all. And we would have the PTA to help out a little bit. I never was a person to believe in pushing the parents to pay for a whole lot of stuff, even though the children on them, I always thought that the state or county somewhat ought to pay for that. And parents are poor enough anyway, so they ain't got no one to be paying.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the allocations were distributed equal?
Oh, no, they weren't for as white and black. No, they weren't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that for a fact. But a lot of times in the central office, when they allocate those funds, we never knew because we didn't have anybody up there in the business office. But mm-hmm. we've had a way of finding out that the funds were not equally distributed to schools in terms of enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And that the white always got more of this and that than we did, you know. But
mm-hmm. Was your school desegregated before you left the principalship?
Well, let's see if that's the question that was raised, and then uh-huh. I couldn't necessarily answer. Yes, it was No. It wasn't desegregated. Let me think. See if it was desegregated before I left there. Let me talk, say a few things, and maybe by mm-hmm. rambling it might mm-hmm. come to me. Now, this is 60. You talk about a period of 64.
64. And now you left in 69. So right. Was there any time in there that you had whites and blacks at your school? Do you remember?
Not at this school. What happened? No, we didn't have any white and black at that time. Because I think about 69, 67, 68, they began to, some kind of way they had led black folks believe that the immigration was taking place, but the white school was the best school to go, and the white mm-hmm. stayed there. And some parents in the opposite state sent students over there because somebody said that school was better than this school
mm-hmm.
over here, you know, on this side of the track. And as far as white students, at that time, there weren't any coming.
Because we had that freedom of choice. And so when the freedom of choice, some of the blacks went to the whites, but the whites didn't come to the black classes.
They never decided to come mm-hmm. on this side of the track.
What about your cafeteria management?
Well, originally, I managed the cafeteria because we had a cafeteria mm-hmm. in 59 in the state. We're not operating or running those things at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we operated that. I mean, when I went there, the parents had helped organize with the former principal and had a lunchroom going.
They came up with the lunchroom themselves.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and that was the only black school this county had a lunchroom as such. And so which meant then that you were having all these strenuous regulations, they had a few to follow mm-hmm. as far as the state was concerned. But you ran that yourself and hired your cook and your lunchroom personnel. That was your job, the principal's job to do that. And also, your job was to do that. I never forget to do that report.
all of the 64 principals have told me about that report.
That report.
And that lunchroom report.
That lunchroom report, you could never get it right. And it was a percentage of error in it anyway. They didn't let you know it was a percentage of error in it.
Uh-huh.
If you got up to a certain point, they'd go along with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But 4 or 5 points or something like that, they said, well, that's all I said, it's a percentage of error. If you get this near to it,
they'll accept.
Yeah, but want no perfection. You couldn't get the thing right.
You just couldn't.
And one of the things that requires is that you not, you see, it's supposed to be non-profit, so you weren't supposed to make any.
Mm-hmm.
The report was never supposed to show in the profit, mm-hmm. and then you weren't supposed to show that you in the red. You know? <It's> And when we started making profit, that's what I tell the lunchroom people. I said, buy some ice cream, buy some pork chops. said, you got to use this one up.
Buildings and grounds.
Well, that kind of helped maintain the building ground, but generally that was our job to do most of it, like keep the grounds clean and that attracted. That basically the schools, mm-hmm. or the principal of the school's job to maintain that to a given point. I don't know what answer what you want or not.
Yeah, that's it. The relationship that your school had to this community in Boynton, how was it viewed in this community?
I think it was real good because when I first went down 59, that the school was in debt. So I organized what they call satellite PTAs. I think I had four or five of them. East End, West End, and something.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that, I would go to they had the little meetings in the home, and then once a month we'd go to the big meeting.
Oh.
And I'd go in and out to these meetings and tell them when they're going to have them, because the school's in there too. That was one reason too. And that's what we organized. And that put me pretty close to the parent.
Mm-hmm.
In the home, you know, they have a meeting at home, and it was real, what's it, formal, informal?
Informal.
Informal,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the setting was like that, and I think that made them feel close to me. Mm-hmm. And
so
they really worked, I mean.
They would work in their district, like the East would have yeah. things in the East, and then when you got together, you all used that money to pull the school
and
out of debt.
Sometimes they would have a little program, and that the district would have a program for the parent meeting, you know,
mm-hmm.
at school.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it was money, a project, each of them would have a project and kind of a competitive thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that put a lot of gump, a lot of life into the community, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, it did.
And they worked fine. I really enjoyed it because coming into the community, that's where I got to know a mm-hmm. whole lot of parents that I wouldn't have known personally, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. to be frank, I was born about 9 miles in the country from mm-hmm. me, but still I didn't know these parents in the city here.
Mm-hmm.
Now the school I had Eastman back out in the country, I went there and graduated from Eastman, but I knew those folks are there pretty good, but it came to town, it was different. And then it helped me to learn the difference in a rural community and a part urban and rural
mm-hmm.
community.
Mm-hmm.
But your people just think a little different, act a little different.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's there.
Folks in town don't think like the country folks.
Mm-hmm. So here I had to deal with the two.
Yes.
And of course that helped me by having these satellite PTA groups
mm-hmm.
to get a feel what really was going on. Of course I had two out of town. Yeah, because the district was about 10 miles out. So, and that helped mm-hmm. a lot and kept me informed a lot and mm-hmm. a lot of times. Many parents felt free to say some things to me that they'd like to say, that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Good relationship. How much administrative power and control did you have over your school site and your responsibilities?
I mean, as far as controlling it? Trying to give me an example of what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, how much power do you think you had as a principal? What could you do there? I mean, do you think you really had power and could control things at that school?
Oh, yeah. At that time, basically, I mean, I knew if my school was all black, I had all the power I wanted.
Mm.
You know, as long as you got along with the superintendent and you got along with your parents, and like I was talking with my parents, I didn't have no trouble with them. I had power to deal with them and say what we need to do and what we'd like to do. Because he knew the parents was with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I imagine it gave you some power that wasn't even associated with the school.
Oh.
You could give parents advice and all that.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did the desegregation of schools affect your role as a principal?
Well, that was one of the questions you raised on that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it did not affect my role as a principal, because we had this union school, and I had constantly talked with the superintendent about if he could separate the two schools, you know, high school and elementary school, and I told him that was too much for one man to do. And finally he figured out a way through the campus, an old road there for years ago. And he found that old road, said, we can divide the school, or the school's gonna make, put a principal in each one of the schools on the same campus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about, yeah. So it took him a year, I guess, or two to work that out. So they worked that out. And that was about 65 or 66 or something along that time. But still, as far as desegregation in the school, they still, I reckon they had the freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Still along there, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So you still, at that time, it wasn't affecting me at all, mm-hmm. but.
Did you retire in 59?
No.
What did you do after 59?
69.
I mean in 69,
what
did you do then?
No, what happened in 69, they transferred me to a school, let's see if I go back. Oh, they split the school.
All right, they split the school, and you were principal of two schools at one time, because you were principal over the
Union.
Union, you had the...